We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
When I was just a baby, Mama told me, son,
welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you. Happy Hanukkah. This is the Hanukkah edition of the show. In this half hour of the show, we'll be talking with Sotheby's, that's the auction house, Sharon Mintz. Sotheby every year has a Judaica auction, and this year they've got some pretty incredible stuff. What to talk about? Yeah, this is like exciting stuff. And who knows? Just let me know if you do participate in the auction. Give me, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayigash, and it is Hanukkah, so we're going to talk about the two together. We have a wonderful assortment of mostly Hanukkah music, various sites, and I don't have any. I have a little dreidels there. Thank you very much. We have a wonderful story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Three rockets were fired from Gaza into southern Israel. The rockets were intercepted by Israel's anti-rocket Iron Dome system. In response, the Israel Air Force blew up training and storage sites for weapons in Gaza belonging to Hamas. IDF forces operated in Samaria captured the Hamas terror organization's most senior member in Judea and Samaria, Sheikh Hassan Youssef. That's who he was. The arrest of the senior Hamas leader comes as part of a larger crackdown against terror activities in Judea and Samaria. A total of 32 Palestinian Authority residents were arrested in IDF operations. A security guard at Jerusalem Central bus station was stabbed near the entrance of the station. He was evacuated to Shaari Tzedek Medical Center in the city. Police have identified the terrorist as a 24-year-old resident of the Palestinian Authority. The terrorist fled the scene immediately after the attack, but was later located and captured by security forces. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the U.S. Embassy will not be moving to Jerusalem during President Trump's first term of office and does not recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The U.S. will continue to list the place of birth of individuals born in Jerusalem simply as Jerusalem, with no country listed. That's for Americans born abroad. And elsewhere, Swedish police have tightened security near Jewish sites throughout the country in wake of two attacks in Malmo and Gothenburg. No one was hurt in either attack with minimal damage. Three people were arrested. The lighting of a giant public menorah in Stockholm went off without a hitch. And finally, speaking of Greeks and Hasmoneans, a town dating back to 160 BCE was discovered in Judea. Coins, pottery, and ritual baths recently uncovered revealed a Hasmonean-era Jewish town at the Susia in Mount Hebron. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We are on line with, this has become a regular already. I think this is the third time maybe we've had Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's, who's going to talk about the upcoming Judaica auction, which is going to be held on December 20th at Sotheby's. How are you, Sharon?
I am fine, thank you. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back on your radio show.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Okay, so now when I saw the advertising about this upcoming auction, I said, yeah, I wouldn't mind one of those. Tell us about the star item of this week, this year's auction, please, Sharon.
This year's auction is particularly exciting because we have not one but two decorated Bibles from the medieval period, and it's unusual for even one to come up. It happens maybe once a decade in terms of decorated medieval Hebrew manuscripts. But to have two in one sale is highly unusual. This particular auction, we are offering a complete Bible from Spain that was produced in the 14th century, so about 1325, the early part of the 14th century, in Castile, likely the town of Toledo, which was home to an important center of Jewish culture and life. And the Jews there were producing beautiful, beautiful architecture when one thinks about the synagogues of Toledo, but also illuminated manuscripts as well. And we are proud to be able to offer a Bible from that period, which is richly gilded and decorated and shows both the Islamic influences in the art of its decoration. It's called Budehar, art and aesthetic, as well as the Christian influences in the painting and the gouache and the gilding of the pages. The Bible is also replete with micrography, which is a particularly Jewish form of art where the scribe took the miniature letters of the Masorah, which is the text used at the bottom and sides of the page on the marginal notes to ensure the correct transmission of the Bible. And he took these words and formed them into beautiful, beautiful geometric forms. And this is very exciting because only six such Bibles survive in the world in private hands, and only three have ever come up for auction in the last 100 years. So this is really a moment. And we have a beautiful video showing this Bible. If anybody is interested to go online and see photos of what it looks like, it's at Sotheby's.com. It's quite special.
Okay. Do we know anything about the prominence, like the owners between the 1320s and 2017, Sharon?
So as your listeners will know, the Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492 and then again from Portugal in 1497, and they took what they could with them. They were forbidden from taking many things, but they did take their books and manuscripts because these were treasures. So important were these books to them that they called their Bibles Mikdashia, meaning small temples, because they sort of stood in place of the temple in Jerusalem, and they could carry them with them. And this particular Bible, we know, went to Salonika, because there is a sales note from 1526 when the widow of the owner, Moses Abulafia, sold it. And there's an entire page dedicated to the sale in Salonika of this Bible. And the Bible apparently stayed in the Ottoman Empire for a while and then traveled on further. And by the 20th century, was in private hands in Europe.
Mm-hmm. This is the sounds like it's the same collection of originally from what we discussed last year. There were things that were brought up to auction. Is that correct?
What we have this year in the sale is the private collection of Mr. Lunzer. We're selling a really important selection of his silver book bindings, as well as two fascinating decorated plaques. One honoring a man who was given the community honor of Chatan Breshit, and the other honoring the person who was called up to the Torah for Chatan Torah. These are two important honors that were given on the holiday of Simchat Torah. But the main piece that we have are these silver book bindings. I think there are about 25 of them. And they are very beautifully decorated, many of them from Italy. And these silver book bindings feature the coats of arms of Jews who were living in Italy, wealthy Jewish families, who adopted coats of arms for themselves and employed these coats of arms on the objects that they created, including objects of Judaica that were donated to the synagogue, textiles, silver, marriage contracts that they created for themselves, as well as bookbindings. Often these bookbindings were given as wedding gifts and feature the coats of arms of both the family, the bride and the groom.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you said there were two Bibles. So tell us about the other Bible, please, Sharon Mintz.
The other Bible is really a fascinating story. It was created in France in the 13th century, between 1250 and 1275. It had come down in private hands and was completely unknown and unrecorded in all of the scholarly literature. And it was astonishing to see because it's incredibly rare that we have important medieval decorated manuscripts that nobody knows about. And this Bible was created by the scribe Matityah, and we know this because he decorated his name when it appears in the Bible. In the Book of Chronicles, for example, he would put a little flower next to his name. And then we also have a sales note where he describes how he sold this Bible to Michal Bar Crespia. And it's a particularly unusual phenomena to be able to have a Bible with scribal notations. It's a fascinating book.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about, so we know both of these Bibles were written by Jewish scribes and were owned by Jews then, Sharon?
Yes, that's correct.
And they managed to make it through the centuries. I mean, I can understand it's just there may have been many, 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 many Bibles that were written during this time, but these are just the few that actually did happen to make it through the 20th
yes,
century.
Yes, I mean, between 800 century. And 700 years old, they really survived. But these Bibles were expensive to produce. Each one of them is, the Bible from Spain is 470 folios. Each folio is a page, so that's 950 pages. And the other Bible, which was produced in France, is 370 folios. So these Bibles were both written by hand by an expert scribe on parchment, which was an expensive material. It's a, animal skin, sheepskin, mm-hmm. most likely. And you think about the amount of sheepskins that you needed to produce a large Bible, and it would have taken a scribe over a year to produce this kind of a book, and sometimes we had more than one scribe. We had a team of artisans. In the case of the Bible from Spain, it's likely that in addition to the expert scribe, there was also a nakdan, someone who put in the vowel points, a masran, someone who added the mesorah in these decorative geometric forms. And then the book was handed to an artist to illuminate and to paint. So this is a large and important endeavor, significant outlay of funds. And Jews treasured these, and they did, as much as possible, they did get passed down when Jews could. So it's not entirely surprising, that they're still here after all these years. The Bible was not particularly persecuted, as were other Hebrew books like the Talmud, or other Jewish books, I should say. The Talmud is primarily in Aramaic. It did have more of an opportunity to survive.
Mm-hmm. What would I need? Let's say I was actually the winning bid for one of those two Bibles. What would I need to do? Could I just put this thing on my shelf?
Actually, you pretty much could. The reason that these survive so well is because the books are closed. So, they're somewhat protected from the elements. Parchment is a living and breathing strata. So it's important, that there not be wild swings of humidity, because if the humidity goes up, the parchment sort of enlarges, it sort of relaxes. And when it goes down quickly, it shrinks, and then the paint and the ink, which is sitting on the parchment, contracts and shrinks at a different, or shrinks and expands at a different rate. So often we suggest that, you know, one try to maintain a relatively constant humidification. But other than that, they sit on the shelf. You know, we can think about the papers in the Cairo Geniza and the pieces of parchment that lasted there from the 9th century onwards, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and are now come down to us today. You know, parchment will last. It'll stay forever. And the parchment that's, you know, well taken care of, and a binding that's sitting nicely on a shelf and is open, one can read and study from it every week. It's quite a treat to be able to see these.
I could imagine. Anyway, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's, and we're discussing the upcoming auction of Judaica to be held December 20th, and we'll talk about that soon. So, Sharon, what are some what would you say would be the opening bid on those two Bibles?
Well, the Bible from Spain, which is a highlight and incredibly rare, the opening bid will be the estimate is $3.5 million to $5 million. The opening bid is generally below the lower estimate. That's the way auctions work. And the Bible from France is estimated at $400,000 to $600,000. It's not in as perfect condition as the Bible from Spain. It's missing the entire book of Leviticus. And often, collectors who determine the market value like things that are in complete and beautiful condition, which explains the difference in price and estimate between these two very rare Bibles.
So somewhere floating out there is the book of Leviticus just by itself that some collector may have taken and just said, well, I'm just going to sell this part then.
It's possible. Over the course of my career at the library, the Jewish Theological Seminary, and again at Sotheby's, I have seen separate halves of books that landed in different continents become reunited. I've seen this on several occasions, you know, where books written in 1300 and 1400, were sold separately, two halves. And, you know, in the 20th and 21st century, people realized that they were two halves of the same book and either reunited them or sometimes were able to digitize both parts and reunite them digitally online, which is always a very exciting endeavor.
Indeed. So
you never know. That's the exciting thing of the book and manuscript world, Judaica, and the auction world as well.
Okay, so now, since you put up the conditions, so let's say we were selling these on Amazon, and these were in the used book section. So in Amazon, they have, now I'm giving you a plug here for Amazon, so you have different grades in the used book. You have new, like new, very good, good, fair, and like, you know, just pulp, whatever it is. Where would you put these two Bibles as far as their condition, as far as a book that a person would just go out and buy at, say, a bookstore or online?
Well, the Spanish Bible is in absolutely beautiful condition. The gold is glistening on the page. The parchment is very fine. It is in very good condition. The Bible from France from the 13th century had more wear over the years. And in fact, it will probably need some restoration, which can be done. And we are advising our clients and people who come in to view these Bibles that this is part of the consideration. But on the other hand, you know, you buy something that's 800 years old and bring it back to life, there's a joy in that as well. It's not that it's not back into life, but it needs a new binding, and some of the pages are slightly frayed, and it's in delicate condition. That's the word I would use.
Okay, delicate condition.
A treasure, an absolute treasure, but will require a little bit of restoration, which also informs us about the estimate. And this is very exciting to be speaking to you about this. I always enjoy being on your show, and I look forward to the next opportunity.
Okay, so just to ask you, we're running out of time over here as far as your time constraints, but if you could tell us, how do people, if they want to bid, and just very quickly, some of the things that aren't $3.5 million that people might be interested in?
Absolutely. In our auction, we have an entire range of materials and objects of Judaica, beginning with Chanukiot, Chanukah menorahs, and other kinds of cups that are Kiddush cups and other material that is much more affordable to the general population. And we have painting. There's an entire sale of Israeli art as well. And there's some beautiful paintings of biblical scenes in our Judaica sale. There are prayer books. There are Haggadot. There's a wonderful Arthur Schick Haggadah, which is interesting because it relates to the Schick exhibition that's going on right now in the New York Historical Society. If anybody's in New York in the next couple of months, it's an absolutely fascinating exhibition, well worthwhile visiting. And the way that one would be able to participate in our sale would be to register with the bid department in advance. It's online. Or you can call them and speak to them and register. And then we have the process of bidding either in advance with an absentee bid, or you can come in to our auction house next Wednesday and bid in person, or you can request to be on the phone, or you can bid online. It's a new era, and we have online bidders as well. They're very active. And your viewers may be interested to know that our auctions are available to watch streaming. You don't have to register or participate. You can watch the fun and be a part of the history just by logging in and watching the streaming action. So that might be exciting as well.
Fantastic. And what time does that auction start on the 20th?
That auction starts at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, December 20th.
Okay, wonderful. Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's and Sotheby's.com. I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing the wealth, I guess we could say, and enjoy the rest of Hanukkah.
Next year, come to New York, and we'll be delighted to host you, and we can do a video cast from Sotheby's.
Wonderful. Sounds like a great idea. Okay, that's going to do it for us. I'm going to take you too. You too. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Erschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Yeah, so if you want to know what I wanted for Hanukkah, 1300s Bible that doesn't need refrigeration or that kind of stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. You could contact me on rabbifinman.com. I would even tell you where I lived if you were to get it for me. So up next for your listening pleasure, everybody knows about the lighting of the menorah. And after the menorah is lit, there are various songs which are sung. One of them is Haneras Halalu, which is what we're going to be listening to from the Hamagdim Choir. And the words basically say that these lights are really special. We don't use them. We look at them in order to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah. Let's listen. Hey. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Eric Schulfinman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I always have a challenge of finding different genres of different music. So we have up next, this is actually Mickey Katz. Everybody knows Mickey Katz. The song is called the Dreidel Song. Dreidel is a Hanukkah top. It has on it, it's four-sided with a point at the bottom. So just imagine a cube with like a little triangle, a cone at the bottom. And so it spins and it lands on a specific side. And the letters on the side indicate what's supposed to happen. The letters are Nun, Gimel, Hey, and Shin, which stands for the abbreviation for Nes Gadol HaYasham, a great miracle happened there. And you could look up the rules of what happens if you get a Nun, a Gimel, a Hey, or a Shin. We're not going to go into that right now. The song actually has no words, so he could have called it anything, but he called it a dreidel because the word dreidel also means to like spin around. Let's listen to Mickey Katz.
Mendel make with a dreidel. Berl make with a dreidel. Shimon, can you make a dreidel? That's a dreidel.
Mickey Katz, the Dreidel Song. Up next, this is Mati Steinmetz, who seems to be getting all over the place all these days. He's an up-and-coming, young, very young man with a very clear voice. This is not a particularly what you would refer to as specifically Hanukkah song. The song is called Dem Sudenu. It was, I think, composed 1930s, I think, for some Yiddish theater per se. And it describes when the Messiah comes, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be this really elaborate meal. And all the things that are going to happen at the meal, what they're going to serve, what they're going to drink, who's going to talk, who's going to be the band leader, who's going to lead the grace after meals. All this is done in this, and this is Mati Steinmetz, Just For You. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
You are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayigash, which is chapter 44 of the book of Genesis and counting. We're still in the middle of the encounter between Joseph and his brothers. And we're going to relate that with the
season that which we are in now, a Hanukkah celebration. This is written by the Shelah HaKadosh, who was a philosopher of the late 1600s, who maintained that it was not by accident that a holiday fell where it fell in the reading of the portions, and maintained that there was a connection, and therefore up to us to find that connection. The word Vayigash means he encountered. The story goes is that Benjamin had been arrested, accused falsely of stealing from the viceroy, and was going to be made a slave. Judah, it says, took it upon himself, of all the brothers, to get Benjamin back. The word Vayigash is a very strong word. We translate it as, and he approached. And the way it looks, if you just read the Bible straight, this is where you really need to know the backstory behind it. I'm telling you right now that it is impossible to open up a Bible, read it, and say, I understand it, because there's so much in between the lines that when Moses came down the mountain, he had to tell people, and those traditions have been taught from teacher to student for over 3,300 years, and they're now written down in various books, of course. Judah sounds like he's pleading. Oh, please let him go. But that's contrary to the word Vayigash. Vayigash means he prepared himself to war. And indeed, in the early commentaries, so it says the exchange between the two, between Joseph and Judah, and how Judah really was ready to take out his sword and chop off Joseph's head. Yes, he was going to go for the cause. And then seeing that that didn't work, tried the standard guilt approach. You know, he can't muscle him. He had to make him feel guilty. And then he said, fine, yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm Joseph. And, and then the rest is history. Where are we putting our emphasis here? The portion is called Vayigash. Even though it says he prepared for war, but he didn't have to go to war. The name of the portion reflects the content of the portion. What was Judah prepared to do? Judah was prepared to save. He's referred to here as a child. Why is he called the child? It's because he's the youngest. He was 33 years old at the time and had 10 kids. But as Judah would say, he's still my baby brother. So the idea being, the way it's presented is that a person must have self-sacrifice for saving a child. And how is it that we can best save children today in the 21st century ties into directly the story of Hanukkah. The word Hanukkah is not just some word that describes a holiday. There's a meaning why it is that it's called Hanukkah. There's actually many meanings ascribed to the word Hanukkah, because there's no word Hanukkah in Hebrew. When you say Hanukkah, it just means the holiday. But based on its etymological root, we see how do we explain what it is? One of the explanations is that the word Hanukkah comes from the word chinuch, meaning education. What is it the Maccabees did? The Maccabees stood up against the Greeks. What was it that the Greeks wanted to do? The Greeks did not want to. The Hasmonean, Syrian, Macedonian Greeks, however, what nation you'd like to ascribe them to, they didn't want to kill Jews. These were people who were into philosophy. These were people who were upstanding people. These were not barbarians. Just ask them. They wanted to remove the concept of holiness from Judaism. They thought Judaism was wonderful. You have all this symbolism going on. The Bible is a tremendous book of wisdom. Listen, the word philosophy means love of wisdom. It doesn't mean just love of Greek wisdom. It means love of all wisdom. So here you have this other wisdom. Yeah, this is really cool stuff. But what's this consecration stuff saying? It's better than everything else. What makes the Bible better than, say, Havdil Plato? Okay, this is a philosophy. Okay, it doesn't exactly agree with our philosophy. We can learn from your philosophy. You can learn from our philosophy. We could discuss it. We could be good buddies. But what's this you're talking about? Holiness? Okay, if a book of Plato would fall on the floor, nobody would, you know, they pick it up, whatever. But if a Jewish book, a Chumash, a Bible, falls on the floor, we pick it up, we kiss it. It's a very minor tragedy, but still one that we show our endearment to it. As Sharon Mintz pointed out before, that these Bibles were called little temples because the temple we couldn't take with us when we were expelled from one country to the other. But these books, which were really more important than any building, contained in it the tradition that was necessary to preserve Judaism. It's a whole different outlook. There is a custom among many people that when they're sitting and learning, let's say they're learning Talmud. Okay, now Talmud gets into some very arcane and mundane subjects. You have whole sections of tort law. What happens if your ox gores my cow? What happens if I dig a hole and your animal falls into my hole and dies? What happens if I hit you? Okay, how to go about adjudicating all of these cases? These are all discussed in the Talmud. So it could very well be, this is a long part of Talmud, between those four books that I just mentioned, it's like close to 500 folios, which means 1,000 pages. Is devoted towards these subjects. And it's very possible that a person can sit and think, you know, this makes a lot of sense. In fact, I used to teach a class downtown at the city county building for judges and lawyers, and we would hash out Talmudic topics and how modern jurisprudence would approach such a topic and how the Talmud approached such a topic with the differences in, you know, an analysis. It got very academic. So there are people, when they sit down and they learn Talmud, so they'll say something, and this is what the Holy Talmud says. Okay, meaning that they're putting it into perspective. This is not an academic adventure that I'm going on. This is rather an act of holiness. This is connecting me to God. One of the things that the Maccabees wanted to do in driving out the Greeks and their philosophy was to reinstill and to the education system, the word chinuch coming from Hanukkah, this ideal of this is really what has caused the Jews to be able to survive over the last 2,000 years. Is our attitude, not that we just have a Torah book. It's not a book. It's we have this connection to the Almighty. And so Judah, when he stood up to Benjamin, to Joseph, who had captured Benjamin, and said, you know, we'll raise him like an Egyptian now. He'll be a good Egyptian. Said, no, that's not going to happen. We're not going to lose that connection. Not even one kid. You say it's only one kid, not even one kid, because we all have that connection to the Almighty. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go away. We've got a really cool story for you coming up next. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way, go to rabbifinman.com. What will you find at rabbifinman.com? Well, of course, right on the homepage, there'll be a way of connecting to me. Ask me a question, make a comment, criticism. It's all good. And I answer all these mails personally. You'll also find archived editions of the show. Missed something last week, the week before, last year? Want to do a binge listen? Let me know how that goes for you. At rabbifinman.com. You also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U story, all ways in which I present Judaism in an entertaining and educational, brief way as also, because I know people don't have a lot of time. That's always been my thing. Let's get it right. Get to the point. Yeah, so that's what we do. We get to the point. Speaking of getting to the point, we need you to get to the point. It's the end of the year. We're in December. This is the end of the tax season. I'm not sure what's going to be with next year with tax codes and whatnot, but you probably could use a couple of tax deductions. So charity is a really good way to do it. And the Jewish Hour is part of a blanket organization, which includes Jewish Ferndale and other things that are part of a 501(c) tax deductible charity. It's nonprofit is what we would call it. And so the government will say, wow, look, they gave to the Jewish Hour. That's way cool. We're going to take off some of their taxes. They don't have to pay so much taxes. That's what's going to happen if you do that. And you know what? The Almighty's going to say, look, that person gave charity. That's a wonderful thing. Tzedakah in Hebrew means righteousness. This is a righteous person. Yay. Okay? And then you'll feel good about yourself because you did it. And I'll feel good because like we get to pay for the show. And all the people who are listening will benefit from your act of charity, of righteousness. So go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page, click a number. Don't like any of those numbers? There's a fill-in place. You can fill in any number that you like. It's all good. Don't like internet giving? No problem. Just send your donation in any amount to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Speaking of 1725 Pinecrest Drive, which is located on the west side of downtown Ferndale at 9 Mile, this coming Monday, that's tomorrow night, at 6 p.m., Jewish Ferndale will be having its grand menorah lighting. We will be featuring, of course, a 13-foot menorah right on the lawn. You can't miss it. There'll be food, including traditional holiday fare such as latkes. We have a fire presenter. He's not a juggler. He said, I'm not a juggler. This is a fire artiste, as he calls himself. We have live music. Come in. You'll take a look. You'll take a check out. We have handmade candle making, beeswax candle making. You get to come in. You can make some beeswax candles for yourself. That's thanks to the generosity of Hazon, the organization which encourages sustainability here in the Detroit area. And that's six. It's all free of charge. There'll be stuff for the kids, stuff for young professionals, stuff for middle-aged people, stuff for seniors. This is talking one of those things where it's like fun for the whole family. Yes, everybody comes to Jewish Ferndale. They have a good time. And you can check out some of the programs that we have over there and all the wonderful things that are going on at Jewish Ferndale. We have now a story happened actually 2 years ago. In the city of Sfat, there is a large yeshiva. And during Hanukkah, they give the students off towards the late afternoon to go travel out to the various places to encourage people to celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah. So there was a car of about six yeshiva students who went up to the Golan and entertained and did whatever they did with the soldiers that are away from home. They bring them donuts. They bring a couple of menorahs. The people light them over there because it's not military issue that they'd be traveling with menorahs, so there's not necessarily menorah there. And they make the soldiers feel, like, really happy. And I've heard many, many stories of soldiers who were so impressed that they themselves actually decided, when I get out of here, I'm going to go to yeshiva and be like those guys. So they're driving back from the Golan to Sfat. And one of this, just before, about 15 minutes before the city of Sfat, which is up a mountain, is the city of Hatzur. Hatzur is most known as having a very large mall. There are not many malls in Israel. I mean, Israel is state. It's about twice the size of Oakland County. There's not a whole lot of malls. There's a big mall there, so they figured, you know, there's going to be a lot of people over there. It's Hanukkah coming out, and they walked around, and they walked past this one shop. I think it was a dress shop. And this woman came out, and they saw in the window was a menorah. This was like about 10 o'clock at night. It's late. The place is going to close down soon. The menorah wasn't lit. And she came out and said, please, please, come. I've been waiting for you. Please light the menorah. It means so much that you light it. She says, they said, why didn't you light the menorah yourself? And she said, I'm not Jewish. I'm Druze from a village known as Tuba Az-Zaghariya. I am not even getting that close as far as the pronunciation goes. So they said, so if you're a Druze, you're not Jewish, why do you want to have the menorah lit? So they said that she feels such a specialness when the menorah's lit that she really misses it and that she wants it to be lit. So they asked her while checking out her background, what was the deal, and they said, is anybody in your family Jewish, perchance? And as it happened, it turned out that her mother, as a younger person, had gone off, married a Druze, moved to a Druze village, never really got involved with anything with Judaism. And they told her, you know, you are Jewish because Judaism goes according to the mother. And she said, wait, I'm Jewish? She was like, so happy, I'm Jewish, yes. And she said, but wait a minute, what about my brothers and sisters? And they said, well, they happen to be Jewish too. And they said, they're going to be so surprised. Yeah, suddenly to wake up one morning and find that you're not who you are, but you're actually something else. Yeah, that's so this is Israel. Everybody reads Hebrew in Israel. So they took out the blessings. And she read the blessings, and she lit the menorah for the first time herself. That's going to do it for us today. We hope you have a wonderful time. Enjoyed yourself as much as I did this week. We hope you have a great week. Enjoy the rest of Hanukkah. Tonight is night number 4, 5, 6 is tonight. And you still got 6, 7, and 8. It says actually it's quite cute. That's between the 6, 7, and 8. You light more candles than you do in 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Just the way it works out mathematically. So we still got a lot of Hanukkah left. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Let kindness be the highlight of your style. Everyone's a special candlestick. With a flame that's burning with their personal shtick. Your soul is a candle, so kindle that wick. Be a menorah and light up the world tonight. Oh, be a menorah. Celebrate the fact that you're alive. Canine horror. After all that you've been through, you still survive. And when your temper's hot,